sky's so blue. The birds are singing, I got nothing to do. Hey, hey,
hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty, my cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care. Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse, a shortened edition of this show today to make way for our conference coverage. So if you have some desperate questions that you need answered by Ton Bettis, you need to call right away because the show only lasting until 9:30 this morning. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. You can text us your questions at 57500. This morning, Ton, Plant of the Week, the Kwanzaan flowering cherry, and it is such a beautiful, I want to call it a tree. Is it a tree or a bush?
It is a tree.
Okay, beautiful tree.
It is. It's one of the very famous Japanese flowering cherries that are in bloom in many areas across the country and will be in bloom here very soon. And the reason...
You mean if it stops snowing?
If it stops snowing. Okay. I noticed that the flowering pears at the Delta Center are out, and usually within about a week, the flowering cherries will be in bloom from the pears. And so what we're specifically talking mostly about the Kwanzaan, and that's spelled K-W-A-N-Z-A-N, Kwanzaan flowering cherry, is because it is the most showy of all of the flowering cherries. And there are several other popular cultivars or varieties. Mount Fuji is a white blossomed flowering cherry that has a very delicate branch structure that reminds you of something that would naturally be planted in a Japanese garden.
Mm-hmm.
But the Kwanzaan is the one you see about 90% of the time in landscapes.
Okay. And it's also pretty readily available because it is so commonly used and
it is
so showy.
Any box store, any garden center will have them in at least for the first part of the growing season, depending on how things have performed in the Pacific Northwest and in California, where our plants come from. You know, sometimes the availability is limited, but Kwanzaan is one that will oftentimes sell out by mid to late June, and then you're just out for the year.
Okay. Anything finicky about this tree?
Yes, there is. And it's just anything with flowering cherries or fruiting cherries, the sweet cherries, they're susceptible to a number of vascular wilt diseases.
Ah.
And so the useful life on a well-maintained flowering cherry is going to be anywhere from 20 to 25 years before it declines, sometimes 15 to 25 years. And so when you plant them, you just count on them as being something temporary in your yard that will probably need to be replaced within 15 to 25 years of planting. And so it's still, I believe, worth planting them because, you know, sometimes you can plant a number of trees and all of them are too small when they're first planted to give you good shade. But as you work your way through the years and the plants grow, you know, and the trees get bigger, if you have Kwanzaans or other things that decline after that 15 to 25 years, then, you know, that might be okay. You know, just planning on transitioning it to something else.
Okay. So is it water-wise? Not that people are super concerned with snow outside and our, you know, our...
You know, it's going to be...
Picture turning around.
Water-wise-ish. You know, I have a hard time...
Trees aren't necessarily water-wise, are they?
It's going to have moderate drought tolerance. It wants to be deep watered during the hottest part of the year, every week to 10 days. And so you're going to drive water, if you can, about 18 inches into the soil and leave it alone. If it's in your lawn, just let it get lawn water, and maybe once a month, take a hose and sprinkler out under the canopy and deep water it that way. You know, because probably 80% of them are planted in lawn situations. So when you're at garden centers looking for Kwanzaa cherries, there's a few that are similar to it. There's one that's columnar called Flagpole that only gets about 12 feet wide and about 20 to 25 tall.
Mm-hmm.
And then another columnar type called a Managawa. And for anybody that speaks Japanese, I apologize for my terrible pronunciations.
You're giving it your best
yes,
shot.
Yes, but a Managawa is another columnar. And then there is what is sometimes sold as a red-leafed Kwanzaa cherry, but it's actually called Royal Burgundy. And it has the pink flowers, but it has red, kind of plum red leaves through the summer. And so that one is gaining in popularity quite rapidly. So
which one of those would be the one that somebody would plant if they have everything and they want the unique thing in their neighborhood?
Well, you know, all of these, I think, just for me, it's the only common white flowering cherry, but Mount Fuji, they would have one of the only ones in their city. They're out there and available, but because we're so enamored with these double pink flowers on the Kwanzaa cherry, a lot of these other cultivars are kind of forgotten about. But just for the branch form and the uniqueness of it, I like how beautiful Kwanzaa is, but just for how unusual, for me, for having a specimen that nobody else does, Mount Fuji is the one I'm going to actually choose.
One of our features last week was how to plant trees. And ever since we had the discussion, I drive down the street and I look for the root flare to see if the trees were planted properly. And I found that one of the best examples of trees that have been planted well, drive down South Temple here in downtown Salt Lake, because the trees are huge, so you can see them, you know, from your car. You can see that root flare. And then it's kind of fun to notice who's planted their trees properly and who hasn't.
Yes, and when you see situations like that, you know that whoever was managing the planting crew knew what they were doing and supervised them closely. Because honestly, when let's take Kwanzaa cherry, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They're already short-lived. And if that root flare isn't at the right height, and you get it 4 or 5 inches too deep, which was easy to do
right,
if it's been transplanted several times into larger and larger pots. And you could easily take 5 to 10 years off the life of that tree just for the fact it's buried deeper and it has more stress that it makes it more susceptible to insect pests and diseases.
Yeah, that root flare has to be above the ground.
It is better to plant too shallow than too deep.
Right. And you were saying earlier that those roots go out horizontally. They don't go straight down.
It is the biggest load of bull that when you see pictures of trees with their roots, there's almost this mirror image, like you were looking at mountains in the pond and how you see the mountains in the water. And people assume that's what the tree roots look like. But 90% of the roots stay in the top 2 feet of the soil. And they don't just stay under the canopy of a tree. For especially larger trees, you know, the bigger oaks and maples, even cottonwoods, those roots can go 2 to 3 times the width of the canopy in search of nutrients. And so those roots will go wherever water and nutrients are available.
Best place to plant the Kwanzaa cherry?
Full sun and planted correctly. And just make sure that you don't plant it too deeply. And I would really consider wrapping up the trunk in the fall so that as the sun, winter sun hits the trunk, the white tree tape that you're using, that fabric tape, reflects the sun's heat off. Because if you can keep that trunk healthy, that will really extend the life of the tree by not totally keeping diseases out, but by keeping that trunk healthy, it minimizes the chance of not only the internal vascular wilt diseases, but Cytospora and Pseudomonas. And because these are related to peaches, they sometimes can get peach tree borer in them. And so that wrapping that trunk in the fall and taking the wrap off in the spring will prevent a lot of that.
Okay. You can find much more great information on the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page, an article on the Kwanzaa cherry. Also from last week, if you look back to last week, you will find out more information about how to plant trees as well. Number to call with your questions. We're coming back with Phil, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls, 801-575-8255. You can also text at 57500. Phil is on the line in Taylorsville. And good morning, Phil. What was your question this morning?
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I have a honey locust that's about 30 years old, and it's otherwise been a very healthy tree. I lose an occasional limb due to a windstorm, but this year it is not leafing out. It's got little nodules, and I'm wondering, is it just late in leafing out? Even my old willow tree, 40-year-old willow tree, has leafed out. So I'm wondering what might be going on.
Be patient. I have not seen honey locust flowering or leafing out yet.
Okay.
And that's all you can do. I mean, you can go to some of the younger branches and just get a pocket knife and scrape the wood just deep enough to see if there's green tissue underneath. And if there's green tissue under there, it'll likely leaf out. But all you can do is wait and see.
Okay.
So
all
right.
Thank you. I just wondered. Yeah, I just wondered if it was
late May.
Okay.
So late May, if he doesn't see it leafing out, he should worry.
Yeah.
Okay. Great. Thank you. That's helpful.
All right, Phil. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener wants to know, Ton, when should they put down GrubX?
I'd wait a couple of weeks and then put it down.
Okay. Ryan is asking, when is it a good time to prune back pine trees?
Boy, that is unfortunately a very long and detailed question.
You have a few minutes.
Because you don't just cut back pine trees, because if you do it too much, you can actually kill them.
And the make them look really strange, too.
Yeah, the green needles will stay for, you know, 2 or 3 years, but they don't send out much new growth, and eventually they just die of basically starvation. And so if you need to give a pine a general haircut, when they send out the new growth in the spring, those are called candles. And when the candles are fully extended but still soft, you can cut off about 30 to 40% of the candle. And when you see pine trees and spruce trees that are sheared into perfect cone shapes, that's what is being done, is they're cutting off about 30 to 40% of the new candles, and it makes them really dense. And so if you need to, say, limb a pine tree up, or if it's growing too far in one direction, you need to follow the main branch back to some side branches that still have plenty of growth and just cut it where those the side branches come out, because then it'll still grow and fill in. But if you cut back into wood where there are no more needles, that will just turn into a dead branch.
So when you say 30 to 40%, you mean the number of candles, not 30 to 40% of each candle.
Of each candle.
Oh, of each candle.
Yes. So if your candle has extended, say, like on an Austrian pine a foot, then you could cut 3 to 4 inches off and that tree would still be safe.
Okay. But that's how it gets its nutrition, huh?
It's how it gets its energy.
Okay.
And so photosynthesis is the synthesis of sugar, you know, C6H12O6, sure, using oxygen and carbon dioxide. And so literally, it's almost like if your house is run by solar panels exclusively and you go and cover up 50% of them, what's going to happen? And that's the same thing we do to a plant when we overprune it.
Okay. Good to know. Mary is on the line in Bountiful. Good morning, Mary. What was your question?
Good morning. My question is about a small lilac bush. We used to have a chain link fence, and on the other side, the neighbor's bush always blossomed beautifully, even though it's very old. And I think mine is a dwarf lilac bush. But then after we had the lilac, we've had a vinyl fence there now. And so it gets a little light in the mornings, not a lot. And it has never blossomed. Is there anything I can do to help it to blossom?
Your phone connection's just a little shaky, but let me ask you, do you prune that particular lilac?
No, not yet, because it's
okay.
Small.
And so, but it is planted in a lot of shade?
Yes.
Well, that's probably the main reason. Lilacs will eventually produce some blossoms in shade, but they don't bloom profusely. And every once in a while, you just run in to a blossom or a bush that just doesn't blossom for whatever reason. But the shade is probably holding it back.
Oh, okay. Well, that's probably the main problem. It leaves out. It just never blossoms.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe I'll just leave it there and hate to tear it out, you know?
Yeah.
But there's nothing I can do to make it blossom.
No, there isn't, unfortunately.
Okay. Well, I appreciate your answer.
All right, Mary. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, John, has two star magnolias on the west side of their house in Orem. Weirdly, they say two flowers on each have bloomed, but all the other buds seem very tight. Should they be worried about the trees, or is this just temperature swings?
It could be temperature swings, but, I mean, in all honesty, what are you going to do? You know, there's nothing you can do but be patient and see what they do, but I'll bet they blossom out. I haven't seen very many magnolias blossoming yet, and so I think there's still hope.
Next listener wants to know if it's too late to put compost in the garden for planting in May, and if it is, then no. I'm in big trouble.
It's a great time to do it. The soil may be too wet to work if we're getting a lot of rain and snow, but you still have time.
Next person has been using the Ring to Green company for about 5 years. They're wondering how long they should continue that type of a treatment.
Well, I will just say this about any treatment for necrotic ring spot, and it doesn't matter where the treatments come from. If something's not working after 4 or 5 years, you need to change strategies. And so what I would do in this point, you've given it the good, you know, the old college try, and I would just go ahead and get some resistant grasses. You can find them from places like Steve Regan, and they'll say things like necrotic ring spot resistant turf, and just start overseeding in the spring and fall. And you may aerate to do that, but I would just start planting necrotic ring spot resistant turf.
Okay, we're going to take a break for the bottom of the hour news. When we come back, Ryan, you'll be up first, and then Jackie. Number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255. Text us at 57500.
The Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Ton Bettis with you, taking your calls at 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. Ryan is on the line in Salt Lake City. Good morning, Ryan. What was your question this morning?
Yes, our peach tree has been in full bloom for about a week now. And I woke up this morning and there's about a half an inch of snow on all the blossoms. Are we going to get any peaches this year?
Did you plant the peach yourself?
Oh, yeah. We planted this a few years ago.
I just wanted to make sure it wasn't almond, but I didn't want to come across as being like, yeah, you're confused. But that's why I asked. But there are low-chill peaches that could be blooming. The snow isn't a problem. Those blossoms will handle down to about 29 or 28 degrees before you see any damage. And around 28 or 29, you'll see 10% damage. At 26, you see 90% damage. And so as long as you stay in that above the 28-degree threshold, you're fine.
Okay, good. So we won't give up yet.
No, don't give up.
It's not the snow, it's the temperature.
Yeah, it's actually the snow in some situations actually acts as an insulator.
If they've already been pollinated, you know, if they're already on their way, does that help to protect the fruit?
No.
From the...
Once they've blossomed, 28 degrees is the critical temperature.
Gotcha. Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Ryan. Thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says their Rose of Sharon bushes didn't flower last year. What can they do to help them this year?
Fertilize them lightly. Trim them to just give them a haircut because they bloom off new growth.
Okay.
Now, if they're in really heavy shade, they won't bloom. Or if they do, it's very sporadic. And so they need to be in full sun.
Okay. They also know, is it too late to prune their dogwood bushes?
No. You know, you can give them a haircut, and that's okay to do once in a while. But I would consider using renewal pruning to where they take out a third of the branches every year, starting with the oldest branches first.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, they get really stemmy and... When we talked about, you know, how leaves are literally biological solar panels that collect energy, it's really easy to trim those dogwoods so that you only have a layer of 2 or 3 inches of leaves where they really want a foot to 18 inches. And so that's why I'm recommending renewal pruning.
All right. Next listener wanted to chime in on the Kwanzaan. They have a 50-year-old Kwanzaan. They say, granted, it's a bit gnarly, but it still flowers beautifully.
Yes.
I love it when people have their trees last longer.
See that out there. But when I talk about an average life of anywhere from 20 to 25 years, you've got to imagine a bell curve to where a certain amount of them are dying before and a certain amount are dying after.
Mm-hmm.
But the average, so about half of them are dead within that 15 to 25 year period. And once you get past 25 years, you're on borrowed time.
All right. Jackie is on the line in Sandy. Good morning, Jackie. What was your question this morning?
Hey, good morning. Love the show. Love the podcast. Thank you for your time. I have a raspberry shortcake. It's a container variety raspberry. It's been living in a grow bag, like a 20-gallon grow bag, for about 2 or 3 years. I finally have a place where I can put it in ground, and I plan to divide it, but I wondered whether that's a good idea and any tips you may have.
Has it started to bud out yet?
It has. It does have some leaves. So
I would not divide it at this point. Just plant it. Let it grow, and then next spring, sometime in early to mid-March, you can divide it then.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
All right, Jackie, thanks for your call. Carl in East Clinton is wondering, Ton, if you could tell him more about a weeping Siberian.
I wonder if he's talking pea shrub, because Siberian, that's about the only thing I can think of that has...
Does a shrub weep?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
And it looks
just
a little
wondering.
Bit like Cousin It
okay.
with yellow flowers in the spring. They're extremely durable. They don't like to be overwatered, and they're very drought hardy.
And they do well in East Clinton?
Yes, they'll do well as long as they get sun almost anywhere. Most of them have some thorns on them. There are being introduced some thornless varieties, but they look like, literally, if you don't prune them, they look like Cousin It.
Mm.
Yes.
Okay. Interesting. Next listener wants to know, is now a good time to treat for necrotic ring spot?
No, it's a little early. They need to treat with a fungicide if they're going to, when temperatures during the day are consistently between about 65 and 75. It's at 70, but you never just get 70, 70, 70, 70 every day. And so when it's between 65 and 75 is when you do the fungicide application.
All right. Victor is on the line in Harriman. Good morning, Victor. What was your question this morning?
Hello, yes. I have a Japanese maple on the east side of my home that faces east. So I get a lot of shade in the afternoon. Well, I'm out there gardening, taking out some of the winter, growth that has died during the winter. Anyway, I got some brown leaves, just kind of spotty on the tree. I was wondering if I could just kind of take those off. I do have some small buds. It looks like it's starting to come out. But I wonder if I just need to wait a little bit longer and maybe dig around the loosen up the dirt around it. Would that help it?
Well, man, those Japanese maples are very good at ripping our hearts out. They get big and beautiful, and after 15 or 20 years, the limbs start to die. They start to get dye back in them. And so I would cut the dead out.
Okay.
And I would give it another 2 or 3 weeks to make sure it's dead.
Yeah, it's really early. Mine still has tons of leaves from last year.
Yeah, and so be patient. Okay. And then after it has leafed out is when you would cut the dead out. I might get a third of a cup of lawn fertilizer and just sprinkle it under the canopy to give it a little bit of a boost. Because the roots are growing now. It's just that it has not leafed out.
Okay. All right. Okay, I'll do that.
All right. And you can gently kind of pull those leaves off.
You can.
Okay. I'll do that. Thank you so much.
All right, Victor. Thanks for your call this morning.
Thank you.
Next listener would like to know, how do they fertilize a weeping white spruce? Do you fertilize a weeping white spruce?
Not unless you must.
Would that be?
Now.
But when would it be a must that you did it?
It's really hard to say fertilize or don't fertilize, because if a plant is declining,
mm-hmm.
fertilizer probably won't fix it. It's in situations to where the plant is relatively healthy but maybe growing too slowly, and you can eliminate things like compacted soil, being planted too deeply. there may be some nutrient deficiencies. And so just an addition of a light amount of lawn fertilizer under the canopy to see if you can stimulate growth is when you would use a fertilizer. But if a plant is on its way down, it's 50% dead, fertilizer won't help.
Next listener would like to know, how often do they put triple 16 on their burning bush?
I would do it now. I would do it again in 6 to 8 weeks and then call it for the year. You don't need to apply a ton, but just it's almost, there's a process called side banding to where if they can't use a fertilizer spreader, and they really could, I would just put the fertilizer spreader on a medium setting and walk along and spread the fertilizer right into the bushes and let it drop down into the root zone and water it in. Otherwise, there's a few different things they can do. Side banding may not be the best thing, and that's where you'd get a gardening hoe and make a trench, just a shallow trench, on one side of the burning bush, and then just very carefully put a line of fertilizer in the trench and cover it up. That's probably not the best option. I think a fertilizer spreader, just a handheld, would be fine, where they can turn sideways and just broadcast it right into the bushes. I would do it again in mid to late May.
All right. We're going to take a break, come back with more of your calls and questions. Scott, you'll be up next. Number to call, 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Good morning. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you, taking your calls and questions, 801-575-8255. You want to get your calls in early because it's a shortened show today. We will only be on the air until 9:30 to make way for our general conference coverage. Scott is in Highland this morning. Good morning, Scott. What was your question?
Pine tree that reaches over the top of my grapes, and so the ground cover is like 2 or 3 inches of pine needles. I'm wondering if that's harmful for the grapes.
So pine needles, I don't know why locally there's this rumor, this belief that pine needles somehow harm the soil. They absolutely do not. In the East Coast, in the Southeast, pine needles are sold by the bale in stores to use as a mulch in your flower beds. And if they're not toxic there, they're not toxic here. And as long as they're not interfering with other things, what they are doing is they're helping improve the soil. They're helping hold water in the soil. They're helping reduce weeds. And so as long as they're not causing a problem otherwise, I would just leave them alone.
Perfect. Okay. Excellent. Thank you much.
All right, Scott, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, says they bought 2 columnar Mugo pines. The tag said they get about 8 feet tall, 4 feet wide. They want to know how far apart do they plant them and any recommendations what to plant between them?
Well, where they're probably using them as specimen plants instead of like a hedge, I would space them at least 6 feet apart so that they can grow into all their glory without running into the other one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what to plant between is wide open. You know, it just, a lot of it depends on their preferences. You know,
whether you want a ground cover or something a little taller or...
You know, once you get Mugo pines established, they're quite drought hardy. They'll survive on being deep watered every couple of weeks and be perfectly happy. And so maybe some water-wise perennials like the Hummingbird Mints or Zochneria, the Sky Dancer Daisy is another beautiful one, but or Soul Dancer, excuse me. But there are many perennials that they could put in between there that would have similar water requirements to the Mugos once they were established. And
they wouldn't steal the light from any of those.
Not at all. The pine trees, eventually, maybe on their backsides, where on the east or north side in close proximity, they would do some more shade-tolerant perennials. But, you know, for they're not that fast growing. And so for at least 5 to 10 years, full sun things are just fine.
Okay. Next listener says they applied Preen 2 weeks ago. Do they need to reapply?
They need to read the label and see if they do. And they were probably going after Burr Buttercup. And so depending on the application rate, Preen will last anywhere from 6 weeks to all season and the soil type. And so the best I can tell them is to read their label.
All right. Next listener would like you to explain renewal pruning for dogwoods, and can they do that now?
Renewal pruning is the same for all shrubs, and they absolutely can do it now. And that's just where you go toward the middle and the base of the shrub and just find the oldest branches. And you remove the oldest branches. So when you're done, you've removed 25 to 30% of the total branches in the shrub.
Okay. Chris is on the line in Orem. Good morning, Chris. What was your question this morning?
Good morning, guys. Enjoy your show.
Thank you.
Hey, I got a question. I bought some pony packs, marigolds, and petunias. Is it too cold at night to be planting those today?
Yes, it is. The marigolds and petunias, they're just, you need to wait another month to get those out. If you have some really protected areas, you might be able to plug them in mid to late April. But what you could do, if you're going to be putting them in pots, or and say you're going to putting them in smaller patio containers, you might be able to plant them up. And if we're going to get below freezing, move them into a shed or a garage to protect them. But the patio, the petunias and marigolds want temperatures during the day consistently in the 70s.
Super. Thank you, guys.
All right, Chris, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Tom, says they planted romaine lettuce 15 days ago, but it's not come up yet. They're wondering if they planted too early. They're in Provo. It's still too cold, right?
It's still a bit cold, and the soil temperatures may be a bit cool. I would give it another week or two just to be sure. When you plant this early in the year, oftentimes it is beneficial to make a hill or a basically where you make your furrows, the top of the furrows where you want to plant, and I'd have that 4 to 6 inches tall. When you plant on top of the furrow, the soil heats up more quickly and you can get quicker germination.
Okay, next listener wants to know, when do they put pre-emergent on their lawn?
Pre-emergent, any time between now and mid-April. This cooler weather has slowed things down, but by the middle to end of next week, we're supposed to be consistently in the 60s and 70s if the forecast holds true. And so I would get it down within the next week.
Okay. We have about 40 seconds here before the top of the hour, Ton. But Aaron in Pleasant Grove wants to know, they have a weeping white spruce that's refusing to grow vertically. They pruned it slightly to encourage a leader, and it seems healthy, but it doesn't seem to want to grow taller.
Well, man, there's so many
things.
They're
done. That's what the spruce says, hey, that's it, I'm done.
You know, if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck,
that's as tall as it's going to get.
And so what they could do, though, is get a long bamboo stake from a garden center and get it to where it is going straight, and then use bread zip ties or twisty ties. You can buy that at grocery stores. Zip tie it in. Train, if the trunk's still pliable, train it onto the post under the stake. Leave it for a year and it will stiffen up.
All right, quick break. Back after the news.
Never seen the sky so blue. The birds are singing. I got nothing to do. Hey, hey.
Hey, hey.
It's a sunny day.
Sunny day now.
My pocket's empty. My cupboard's bare. Call me illogical, I just don't care.
Hey, hey,
hey, hey, hey.
It's just a sunny day.
Hey, 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 it's a sunny day.
It's just
day.
A sunny day.
It's the KSL Greenhouse. Expert tips for flowers, trees, gardens, and soil. Our hosts are Maria Chaleos and Ton Bettis on KSL News Radio.
Good morning, and thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. A shortened edition today as we make way for a general conference coverage that gets underway at 9:30, which means you have about 22 minutes to get in your calls and questions. Phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can also text us at 57500. Ton, next texter wants to know, can they still prune their butterfly bush, or is it too late?
Do it now, but they're fine to prune it. I thought you were going to say you have 22 minutes to get to the conference center.
No.
Well,
you have longer. You have more time
late than
that. And you know, the nice thing is it stopped snowing. It was snowing hard here downtown and kind of cleared up, so it's kind of nice.
Still overcast, but the clouds are breaking a bit, so.
Next person is asking how to get rid of those little violet-type flowers in their lawn.
They're probably lawn violets, and they were planted as a ground cover. Something containing triclopyr will knock them out eventually, and so T-zone or Teflon ester is another one.
How many times have I asked you this question? Several.
Yeah, and
it takes a while to get them to go away.
It takes two or three sprays to really get them. They're very resistant to most herbicides.
So when you say two or three sprays,
you don't want to do them consecutively. It'd be spring to fall to spring.
Okay.
Because the products, at least if they have 2,4-D or dicamba in them or a number of other lawn weed killers that are mixed together, the restriction is spraying twice annually only.
Okay.
Now, they could try something like Image All-in-One Lawn Weed Killer. That is really good for bindweed, but it's not as effective on some other weeds. But if they needed to do a midsummer spray, they could rotate with that and knock them back and then hit them again in the fall with T-Zone or Turflon Aster.
Next listener is wondering if there's anyone or anywhere that recommends safe plants for animals. Google has so many conflicting searches, and we've talked about this a few times, but most of these plants aren't, you're not supposed to eat them.
No, and most of them taste nasty enough that, with the exception of maybe puppies, that just eat everything. You know, animals are smart enough to avoid these plants because the taste is so bad. And so I don't get a lot of reports or calls from people saying, my animals ate this, what do I do? Just because the taste of the plant is so bad. But they do happen. I'm not a veterinarian, and so I don't see those maybe as much. You know, the one I would avoid that is more of a danger to horses, cattle, deer, elk, are the ewes, and it's Y-E-W. And if they get into the digestive system of an ungulate, like, you know, all these I've just mm-hmm. mentioned, the digestive juices, the acids and things will convert chemicals in the needles of the ewe to cyanide, and it kills the deer or whatever ate it very quickly. But over the last 5 or 6 years, at least once a year, I've heard of entire herds of deer being killed because they were starving and fed on ewes in a residential area. And then the next morning there's a dead herd. And so that's the one, if you live in areas where you have deer coming in or horses or cattle, that's one to avoid.
Are there any resources though that they can turn to places?
There are some poisonous plant pamphlets that are you can download, but they're meant more for horses and cattle and not for dogs.
Okay. And they mainly talk about which ones are poisonous, not which ones are safe, because there's a liability
Correct.
Issue here, right?
Correct. But, you know, the user would be one I'd avoid. Anything in the ranunculus family, the buttercup family, and there are many of those. If you look up buttercup family or ranunculus family,
a bunch
on
of those in my yard. Okay.
Those are ones you might avoid. Lupins are some other ones that you might avoid also.
All right. Kelly is on the line in Mountain Green. Good morning, Kelly. What was your question this morning?
Yes. I can't remember how many more winters it was past that we had so much snow and the deer would come down and they would just eat all the evergreens like halfway up, even blue spruce. You know, it's been, I think, a couple of years since then, and it looks like the growth is coming back, but is there anything I can put this spring to help the growth?
Just some fertilizer to
Just
see
fertilizer.
If you can help
okay.
stimulate some extra growth. The only way okay. to keep the deer out is to have an 8-foot fence around
and
areas.
And we did do that this
okay.
year. And it helped it, but I didn't know if it's just going to take years maybe for it to come
if
back.
If you have evergreens, needled evergreens that were munched back into brown wood, for the upper branches to grow out far enough and then weep down, it will take years.
Okay. All right. I appreciate that.
All right, Kelly. Thanks for your call
Thank
this
you.
Morning. Next listener wants to know if there's a good vine that can grow in the shade. They had a honeysuckle there, but it has died.
I get really cautious because the shade tolerant vine is English ivy.
Oh, no.
You've had some experience with that recently.
Don't do it. Digging it out is just another thing.
It literally cements itself into wood, masonry, cement.
It takes over.
And
it's
when
beautiful.
You,
don't get me wrong, but man,
yeah,
it just takes. Unless you want it to take over, ugh.
It pits cement and masonry because it's used calcium carbonate dissolved into water, and it exudes it right in to hold itself. And so you're pulling out little BB-sized chunks, and it just really ruins the surface of masonry, especially and cement.
How about the hydrangea vine?
Climbing hydrangea does the same thing, although it is beautiful.
Okay.
It adheres.
The one that I have has grown so slowly that it's not taking over anything.
But. No, but it's very slow, but it does adhere. I would need to look it up, but it does adhere directly to the wall without support. And there's two ways of doing that. And that's one, growing tendrils into the cement, or cementing itself with calcium carbonate from the water and soil.
Hmm. I have mine growing on a trellis. But like I said, it's only gotten about 3 feet
and so
high,
if you're
and I've
trellis,
had it for
you're
10 years.
Most likely fine.
Okay.
But the biggest climbing hydrangeas I've seen that have covered a wall have been 30 and 40 years old.
Okay. Well, they're not talking about a wall necessarily. So
no.
They might be
and
okay
so
with
climbing hydrangea
like
may be something they can look at.
And there's nothing else that you can grow in the shade, huh?
No, the English ivy is the other thing, and I don't dare really recommend it.
Okay. Next listener would like to know, have any commercial growers planted corn yet? And if so, what varieties?
Nah, it's
too early.
Yep. Take a nap, read a book. You know, the earliest sweet corn usually goes in late April. You want your soil temperatures at 60, preferably around 65. And then if you want, you can either succession plant the same variety over and over every week to 10 days, or you can wait till say early May and plant three or four varieties and do an extremely early, mid and late season and stagger it that way.
All right. Number to call with your questions, and the phone lines are open at 801-575-8255. You can text us 57500. Good morning. Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. Maria and Ton with you for the next few minutes, taking your calls and questions before we make way for our general conference coverage, which begins at 9:30. Next listener, Ton, would like to know how much fertilizer is needed on an established strawberry patch.
Very little. It's strawberries, if they're over-fertilized, actually grow a lot of green growth and not much fruit. And so if the strawberries are healthy and you're getting sufficient fruit, I wouldn't fertilize them.
It's kind of the same thing that happens with like tomatoes.
It is.
You don't want just all green. You want the
fruit.
It
is. And if they're wondering about it, USU has some strawberry fact sheets that are easy to download. And so you just do an internet search of USU and raising strawberries and it'll bring it up. But that's the first thing I would do. But it's recommended that you fertilize little to none.
Phone line is open. You can call now, 801-575-8255. Next listener would like to know, can you tell them the best way and time to plant oriental poppies and iris?
The oriental poppies are usually available in the spring through summer. And you can get the little starts from the garden centers. I prefer to go to a garden center. And they are one of the few poppies that are actually relatively easy to transplant.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll just buy them from the garden center and plant them.
Wouldn't plant them by seed?
No, you could, but it would take them 2 or 3 years to really blossom and get established.
Not very satisfying.
No, and so I would just consider getting 3 or 4 of them and just planting them. If you needed more, then you could maybe start your own and get them up and going and plant them out, knowing that it'd be anywhere from 2 to 3 years before they started to blossom.
And can you plant iris by seed?
No.
I've never, they're a tuber type thing.
You can plant iris at a lot of different times of the year. There's a time in early summer that they're divided. There's another time that you can divide them in mid-August. And then you can purchase them through the growing season in containers already established. And so they're very adaptable plants.
They really are. I've moved mine a million times after I've thinned them out and I've given them to neighbors. Iris are pretty hardy.
Yeah. The Iris Society usually comes on in the spring talking about their iris events. And it's amazing at how adaptable they are.
What I'm amazed at, though, is the different varieties of iris that you can find.
Yeah, and we covered last week the dwarf iris that you see now, but there are iris that'll bloom from late March through June, depending on the species. And they have all sorts of different looks and heights. Some of the swamp iris can get up to 6 feet tall. Others are barely 6 inches.
It's daylilies, too. I've been amazed at how many different varieties of day. I mean, when daylilies first became popular, they were just the orange daylilies. And now you can find them in every color, variegated colors. It's just amazing.
It is. And the orange one that you usually see is called Stella d'Oro. And they're in the industry, they're just called Stellas. And the reason that you probably have two Stella d'Oro daylilies planted for every one of any other variety is they have a lot longer bloom time. And so the Stellas, if it's below 90 degrees, they will just bloom the entire summer. But once you're above 90, they stop and then they pick up again in the fall. And so they're also somewhat shade tolerant, much more than given credit. And so any of the daylilies are just spectacular.
Right. And I like the shorter ones, too. Like you mentioned, even with the irises, there are shorter ones, there are taller ones, but there are the shorter ones that are the yellow ones that bloom in the midsummer that are really beautiful as well.
Yeah.
And they look more like a little bush than just a single stalk type plant.
Yes. And, you know, going back to, I guess, when things were a little bit more simple and there's still people doing it, but you can be a part of iris societies that people have spent their entire lives breeding iris with the goal of getting it enough merit that it could be introduced to the general public.
I love that.
And there's, I know of two or three breeders that have gotten close, but still haven't quite gotten there. And it's been a 30 or 40 year project.
Okay. Brian is on the line in Lehigh. Good morning, Brian. What was your question?
It's still bearing fruit, but the bark on the base and on some of the branches has peeled away. It's dried, it's peeled, and it's exposing a lot of dry wood. What is to be done for that tree?
Let me give you a few things to look up in case we run out of time. So first thing, do you have a pen and paper handy?
I do.
Okay, look up Southwest winter injury.
Okay.
Greater peach tree borer, B-O-R-E-R. Then Pseudomonas, and let me spell this, P-S-E-U-D-O. M-O-N.
Say again.
Pseudomonas, P-S-E-U-D-O. M-O-N-A-S. So Pseudomonas canker.
Okay.
And Cytospora canker, C-Y-T-O. S-P-O-R-A. Cytospora is likely cause and maybe greater peach tree borer. Do you have, besides the bark peeling off, do you see gumming around the base of the tree, right at the soil?
No, not really.
Good. That may exclude greater peach tree borer. And do you see gumming on the trunk?
Okay, I don't.
You don't. Good. And so it could simply be Southwest winter injury, where you need to start wrapping the tree in the fall and then taking the wrap off in the spring. And it's a white gauze tree tape that has no sticky on it. And that will help. But I also, with it now being injured, I would thoroughly and carefully treat it for greater peach tree borer. And so I would subscribe to the USU Pest Lab updates for fruit and just do an internet search, like on Google or whatever, USU fruit update subscription, and subscribe to that. And there's other updates you can subscribe to. They're free. Your information isn't shared.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, Brian, thanks for your call this morning. Next listener, Ton, wants to know, they started ranunculus inside. They're about 4 inches tall. Are they safe to put them outside yet?
Yes, they are.
Next person wants to know, how do you get rid of Russian sage? No laughing allowed.
No.
Is that bad?
Pull it and pre-emergent, you may have to kill it out with Roundup, or at least try to. That stuff is a survivor. And so I'm not going to compare it to a cockroach.
Oh my.
But people say cockroaches can survive a nuclear bomb, and Russian sage can too.
Okay. We are going to take a break, come back with the bottom of the hour news, and then our general conference coverage will begin. Thank you for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse. We'll be back next week from 8 to 11, the full time. You can also find us on podcasts at kslpodcast.com and check out all of our great information on our Facebook page and Instagram as well. Have a great morning.